Hi, and welcome to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast. I'm Harry Thompson, editor of USA Hockey Magazine. USA Hockey's national championships are right around the corner, so we are fortunate enough today to be joined by Donna Garigula, who's the chairperson for the girls' women's section, who will be out in San Jose, California, when the puck drops on for next Tuesday for the girls' and women's nationals. Hey, Donna, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome, Harry. Happy to be here.
So, Donna, tell me a little bit about your role as the head of the girls and women's section. What does that entail?
Well, basically what that entails is, as the chairperson, I oversee the section, which is made up of 12 reps, one from each of the 12 districts in the country, a few athlete directors, and the national office staff from the women's department, and, you know, one or two, some of the national scouts, Hillary Witten and Ben Smith also still is on the section. Basically what we do on the section is we oversee all girls women's hockey in the sense that these are the people that are volunteers out in the field. They bring back all the information when it comes to membership growth and development. We also, the section reps are in charge of all the district tryout evaluations, which ultimately lead to players that go to national camp, and any of the issues that come up. And we work very closely with the youth council so that both boys and girls, all of our young members, all have the same opportunities, and any of the issues that come up, we're sure that we're looking at each aspect.
And I know that there have been some great growth spurts within girls and women's hockey. Is that continuing today?
Continuing, just like on the youth side, anytime there's an NHL lockout, it affects everything, even the girls. It's just because it's not out there, it's not on TV, hockey is not, people aren't talking about it as much. So I'd say that we've seen on the girls' side in a very short period of time, we're at a little over 67,000 registered females. So in a short period of time, you know, maybe 15 years or so, you could say that the female registration numbers have exploded. But we are starting to see, and the reports coming out of the membership department, are we're leveling off a little. And we basically don't want to go down the same road that happened on the youth side with the boys, is where we become, I think, even with the girls, a little content, and maybe we need to continue to help grow the game so that we get younger girls involved, build bigger programs, and we retain those players so that we can continue. We'd love to see that number hit 100,000 at some point, and we think we can get there. It will take some time, though.
That's fantastic. Well, you mentioned the NHL lockout and how, and just the influence of the NHL on youth hockey. Can you talk, just before we talk about nationals, I just wanted to ask your opinion about the impact that our U.S. women's program has on growing the game. I mean, not only are these fantastic hockey players, but they're incredible ambassadors for the game.
Absolutely. And they are, actually, our national team players are kind of like the NHL in the sense on the girls' side that those are the highest level players that we have. And I have to tell you, they have been terrific over the years, and whether they're former Olympians, former national team players, to the current players right now, I would say it's actually gotten much better, and they are so willing to give their time. I just came back from the Frozen Four, in the Women's Frozen Four in Minneapolis, and we have so many players now, which is great to see even throughout the college ranks. And they are just so willing to give back. They show up at youth programs. They get on the ice. They're happy to give of their time. Even at the college level, we are growing. There's more club teams. There's more D3 teams. So in a sense, I think that we always talk about Reagan Carey, who heads up the women's department. One of the national team mantras is always we talk about being part of something bigger than ourselves. And I think along with their help and everything that they're giving back, along with the section and everybody out in USA Hockey and their affiliates and districts, we are all becoming something bigger than ourselves, and we're all contributing. And I think that, like I said, down the road, I think it'll help grow the girls' game.
When you talk about, you know, giving back to the game and being part of something bigger than yourself, can you just talk a little bit about how you got involved with USA Hockey and with girls' hockey in particular?
Yes, I grew up, I'm one of six kids and grew up in a hockey family. My four younger brothers played. My husband played hockey. It's kind of been a part of my life for a long time. And when I have four children of my own, and when they were growing up, I became active in the New Jersey Colonials. I was the president of that organization in Morristown, New Jersey. At the time, we didn't have a girls program. We had a handful of girls playing on boys' teams. So we formed a committee, and through that we built a girls program within that organization. And over the time that I was involved in all that, I also became involved in the Atlantic District. I didn't start to play hockey until I was 35, and I knew how to skate, but it was so much fun. And I felt, I tell people all the time that it being a player even at a later age and running a youth organization, developing a girls program, it's almost like I had my hand in all the different aspects of hockey. And even when I went into a rink sometimes in the off hours, the people that were at the rink, the manager, I had to negotiate ice contracts for a youth organization, so just being in the rink kind of opened that door. So through that and then the involvement in my district, I went on to become the VP of women's hockey in the Atlantic District, then got on the section, then was elected to the chair. So it's been a great ride for me, and obviously it's something I'm very dedicated to, but that's how I got involved and ended up at a national level.
That's fantastic. Hey, speaking of nationals, I know that the Atlantic District has hosted its fair share of nationals and has done a great job, whether it's with youth tournaments, girls and women's tournaments, or even disabled festivals. Can you just talk a little bit about what goes into hosting nationals and just what kind of a monumental process it is?
Yes. And I was the chairperson of the 2008 Nationals out in Westchester, PA for the girls. But whether you're doing, a youth tournament, the girls, disabled, I think sometimes people should realize the amount, the volunteer effort that goes into putting together the national championship events. And it definitely is true that across the country, in all sports that run national tournaments, probably the most exciting are the USA Hockey National Championships. And I think the reason for that is, one, because the sport itself is so exciting, but the amount of work that every venue puts into, and their volunteers that step up. And every year what surprises me is how enthusiastic and excited all the volunteers are, whatever venue we go to. And you can hear it even on the national championship conference calls. It's like they're doing it for the first time, whether they're a venue that is doing it for the first time or one that's done it several. It just seems to, everybody's able to tap into a volunteer level that's just so excited to make sure that they put on a great event for all the players, coaches, parents. I will say I'm a little prejudiced on the girls' side because we continue over time. It has become harder. It's expensive to run these events. But on the girls' side, a big part of it that we have maintained is a spirit event. In the past, at all the youth national championships, there was an opening ceremony, but it's become harder to do that. And now some of the venues have many more teams at them, so it's very hard to pull off some kind of opening ceremony. But at the girls, even in San Jose this year, it's called the Spirit Event. It'll actually be just an outdoor barbecue, and the teams do come in, and they are encouraged to dress up, show off where they came from, have some pride in the part of the country they're from. And it's just great. Anyone who's ever been at it, it's probably one of the highlights. Other than the games on the ice, it's probably the highlight of the national championships for the girls, to see how excited everybody is and how proud they are to represent their district wherever they're from. Again, we talk a lot about volunteerism in the United States now and how it's become harder. But at the end of the day, when you look at what people put into hockey as a youth sport and the dedication to ensure that they do give every player that shows up at a national championship, because for so many of them it is just, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event, the effort that goes into it is phenomenal. It's just awesome to see how excited every player leaves, even if, even if they didn't make it to the quarterfinals, just to have been there. It's definitely something that everybody's very proud of when it ends.
Well, I know that it seems like a cliche to say it, but every one of these teams and every one of these gals or young men who, you know, who participate. I mean, they're all champions in their own right because they, you know, they've had to come out of their own district to participate at nationals. Can you talk a little bit about how many teams will be there in San Jose and just give a rough idea about the process of punching your stamp to get a spot at nationals?
Yes. This year in San Jose, there are going to be, which is also something new for us. For the first time, we're going to have Tier 1 and Tier 2 girls under the same roof in San Jose. So at 14, 16, and 19, there will be 12 teams per level. We will be running the up in Oakland in California, too. They'll be doing Senior A and B, and that's four teams of Senior A this year and 12, both at B and C. To get there, every district will have a district play down, and whether you have to participate, and you participate at your level. If you're a Tier 1 team, you participate at Tier 1, and if you're Tier 2, you participate at Tier 2. And that can vary from depending on how big your district is, how many affiliates are in your district, that playdown can be over, you know, two different weekends, or it can be over just one weekend. Typically, there are at least, when they get to the end, there are typically at least four teams that are in that playdown, and they play around robin. So when you come out of whatever district you come out of, like you said, you're definitely already a champion. And I can tell you in some of the areas I'm from, in the district I'm in, which is small, and we don't have a very high level of females playing hockey as compared to the big, you know, Minnesota, New York, Central District, where they have many more players. The excitement, just the excitement of winning a district championship, I don't want to say that's enough for these teams, but back home, that is huge to them. It's like winning the Stanley Cup back in their district. Just having the chance to get to a national championship, to say that you played on the ice against some of the top players, is so exciting to them. So they do all go out there. They do realize, and one of the things we're discussing on this section, especially at Tier 2, we're only in our fourth year at Tier 2 national championships. So there are parts of the country where the Tier 2 national competition level is very, very high compared to some of the other parts of the country where they're more community-based, and it's still good Tier 2 girls hockey. But when they get on the national level, the competition's a little bit better. And the nice thing to is you really do see how well trained these athletes are, both on and off the ice, and their ability to go into games and know that they're probably up against a team that's far better skilled, but they still try as hard as they can, and they hold their heads high as they come off. And you hear those statements later saying, you know, we just played Assabet Valley, though, and, you know, we did pretty well. They realize that maybe they're not at that same level yet, but they'll eventually get there. So, again, one of the things I always tell people on a national level, it's amazing, and I know this goes for youth and girls, the amount of volunteer effort that goes into running these district championships weekend after weekend after weekend so that we can get our players and they can move on. It's really a high level of dedication.
Well, you know, you mentioned Assabet Valley, and you know, you never want to single out any one particular program, but last year Assabet Valley ran the table winning the nationals at each respective level. What are some of the, you know, and I know it's probably hard to handicap this year's tournament because you've got, you know, excellent teams coming from all parts of the country, but can you just talk a little bit about some of the powerhouse programs or, you know, teams that, you know, may give Assabet Valley a run for their money this year?
It's interesting because Assabet Valley is out of the state of Massachusetts, and even coming out of Massachusetts this year, the East Coast Wizards are already, you know, giving Assabet a little bit of a run for their money. One of the nice things I will say about Assabet Valley, they really are a Tier 1 organization. They do have a team that's going out to the Tier 2 nationals as well. When you have an organization, Assabet Valley is, I could be wrong here, I want to say they're almost 50 years old. I know they're over 40, I think. And it gives everybody something to aspire to, and it doesn't mean we have other great organizations, many of them, and now what's nice on the girls' side is so many from around the country. Going out to California in San Jose, the San Jose Sharks, that's a great organization. The Anaheim Lady Ducks out in California. A lot of these teams are starting to, when at the end of the Nationals, if they they didn't win in their bracket. If you look at the second place teams out of the Central District, Chicago Young Americans, the Chicago Mission, out of Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Penn Elites, Mid-Fairfield out of Connecticut, the Mid-Fairfield Connecticut Stars, out of Michigan, Honey Baked, out of New York, the Buffalo Bisons are always right up there, and the Syracuse Nationals. So there's so many teams that are showing up and so many different names that we're starting to see. And that's both at Tier 1 and Tier 2. That's good news. And at Tier 2, what's really nice is to start to see teams from all over the country. I think this year there's going to be a team from Arizona. There's a team from North Carolina, out of Florida, the Lady Vipers. So we definitely, it's nice to have that mix. And even at Tier 1 next year at the 16U and 19U levels, we're going to a 16-team format, which we did last year. But and at Tier 1, those top-level teams, I've even read a couple online comments about on the girls' nationals, you really are getting the very top talent at Tier 1. So for the college coaches, they all come out. We were talking about this year what's going to be nice with the both Tier 1 and Tier 2 in one building. Although the college coaches will be there and obviously looking at Tier 1 competition, the fact that they can look at the teams at Tier 2, and like I said earlier, we have more college club and D3 college programs popping up. So this gives our female athletes a great opportunity at Tier 2 because the coaches are going to be there right in the building and they will go over and watch those players. So we're very excited about that.
You beat me to the punch. That was my next question. Was it's just the one, you know, you go to one of these national championships, whether it's on the boys' side or the girls' side, the number of scouts and college coaches, especially on the women's side, who are there watching it, it just presents a it's a great opportunity for these young women to catch the eye of a potential college recruiter and maybe get themselves a scholarship or at least an opportunity to play at the next level.
Absolutely. The opportunities are incredible now. If you have a team and you make it to the national championship, and like I said, it doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, the winning team. The college coaches are in the building. One of the interesting things out east, I know some of the coaches in the local organizations are getting a little upset as the teams begin to do better. I know with the New Jersey Colonials, they're saying that even now the prep school coaches are out at nationals, and they're saying we're losing some of our kids to the prep schools because, you know, as you become better and you get more attention, in the long run, again, it's a very positive thing for our female athletes and the impact of being able to be seen more often by whomever, whether those are prep school, college coaches. It's just definitely a very positive environment, and I think it's definitely going to be exciting. You know, there were a couple, there's always people out there saying, oh, well, the college coaches aren't going to stay to watch the Tier 2 games, and I think you're wrong. I think you're going to see them in the rink paying just as much attention.
That's great. That's great. Well, hey, I know that you've done this, you know, a number of years, and I know that there are extremely long days. I think you get to the rink 7 in the morning, leave the rink about 11 o'clock at night. So I'm sure you've seen a lot, but is it one of those situations where something you've never seen pops up every year, or is any interesting anecdotes that you have from humorous or otherwise from your experience?
Well, I can tell you a couple. Yes, there's a couple things. One, I will tell you, last year in the middle of the Nationals in Massachusetts, we had a fire drill where everybody did have to leave the building. Luckily, it was nothing. But from, you know, we were teams on the ice, players, and everybody was so well behaved, and everybody did exactly what they had to do. So we've had that kind of situation arise, something like that. We've also had an incident on the girls' side. Like I said, the level of enthusiasm and the spirit level is so high. Years ago, we had maybe one or two mascots would show up. From Little Caesars, we'd have the pizza guy show up and maybe the Connecticut polar bear. I want to say it was in Rochester, New York. I think one year we had 10 or 11 mascots on the ice during that opening ceremony. So there's always little things you see pop up, especially on the girls' women's side, that are a little bit different or unusual. You know, there's times we've had parade of champions, not the Parade of Champions, where, you know, there's a full-blown parade with everybody. Like I said, they're all dressed up. It's just definitely, that's probably the, for me and a lot of the volunteers at USA Hockey that continue to come out, and I can speak for everybody on the girls and the youth side, we all talk about, you know what, the Nationals are grueling when you're a director, when you're there, you know, and you're coming in every morning, you're getting there at 7:30 in the morning, and many times not getting back to your hotel at 11. But every time I've done a national tournament, and we hear this from Norm Spiegel on the wrap-up conference call, everybody says the same thing. The players and coaches stop by the tournament office or the table, and they all tell you what a great experience it was. You know, that's why we all continue to do it. That's the bottom line, to watch these players, and how many times even a player will come by and, you know, shake your hand or say, thank you, I had a great experience.
That's what it's all about, especially for all the hard work and the hours that you guys all put into the rink. Hey, Don, I just wanted to shift gears a little bit and ask you about something before I let you go. I know that you know, you mentioned before you're from New Jersey, and the April-May issue of USA Hockey magazine, which is rolling off the presses now, we have an article about how the hockey community had all stepped up and helped each other and helped others in the wake of Superstorm Sandy that, you know, hit the East Coast, especially New York and New Jersey, very hard. I wanted to just get some of your thoughts about, you know, what you saw in your role as a native of New Jersey and also a person involved with the hockey community there. You know, what was it like, and how has the hockey community really kind of bonded together in these tough times?
Harry, once again, anybody who's in hockey knows, I can tell you that it's we talk about it all the time. Hockey volunteers are amazing. When Sandy hit, especially in New Jersey, it hit so hard along the Jersey coastline. And, you know, we have so many towns down there and so many players that play hockey. And, you know, the sad stories of at first, you know, if you're a hockey player, losing your equipment is hard enough. But there are families that lost their entire homes. So very quickly, within hours of, you know, the storm ending, there were people stepping up. There were organizations running, collecting food and clothing and blankets and to bring to families that now had no place to go, were at shelters. I can't even tell you how many different organizations I could list, both in New Jersey and New York, that just immediately, within 24 hours, found ways to hold events so that they could help and give back. I think, too, what I will say that most of the rinks, I've only heard of one or two. You know, we had rinks that went, all the power was out for, you know, a week. Everybody had to adjust. There were teams, you couldn't have practice, you couldn't play games. So the other rinks in the area who helped out, tried to share ice, tried to pick up, rearrange things so that they could take care of the hockey community and that everybody could get their games in, was amazing. You know, again, there were so many areas that were just so devastated. It was almost like even if hockey had to be put on the back burner for a while, people stepped up and tried to get those teams involved somehow in doing something for others. And that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that just always warms your heart. I can tell you still, whenever there's a this type of event happens, everybody who's not as close sees all these horrible pictures and says, oh, my God, you know, that's so awful, that's so awful. But after, you know, a couple months, time does move on. The devastation in New Jersey still, especially along the coastline, you can't really go down to the Jersey Shore areas and not, you know, well up with tears. It's for the whole state of New Jersey, it's hard to explain. I've run into people, and we're all just, you know, it's like you don't know what your future is. But the one thing I do know, and especially in the hockey, you know, arenas all around, is how much everything will be back. It'll be stronger than ever. And I know, too, that in that issue that you're coming at, there's some incredible stories of what people stepped up to do just to help out.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, how are things in the hockey world? And like you said, I mean, the life is still hasn't come back to normal for a lot of these people. But how has the hockey community in the hockey season come back to somewhat normal, or is it?
Yeah, it definitely really did, and I know even in the Atlantic District where we everybody got all their games in, you know, we had discussions on news council calls about, you know, possibly did we have to look at if there were teams or players that couldn't, but that everybody, as I know in the Atlantic District, everybody got all their games in, and like I said, the shared response to even helping out or now holding a game in a facility, you know, that wasn't somebody's home rink, everybody stepped up and got that done. So it's incredible that when you need to wrap up the season, everybody jumped in and did everything they could to make sure that all of our players. And right now, I have to be honest, Harry, the funny thing I will tell you is there's still, you know, right after Nationals are tryouts, everybody's, you know, already all the tryout slots are up on everybody's website. So pretty much hockey is back to normal, and all the panic and worry now about, you know, which team anybody's child is going to be on is as evident as it is everywhere else around the country.
Well, I guess that's a good thing, is that hockey continues to go on. Don, I just want to thank you very much for the time, and I hope you have a great week next week in San Jose, and everything goes real well.
Thank you, Harry.
All right, for anybody listening out there, you can follow USA Hockey's national championships at usahockey.com. Also, Fast Hockey will be broadcasting every game from every location. Certainly check it out. It's some great hockey, and thanks for listening.